This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture
world. You're listening to the longest-running, weekly, episodic comic book podcast in all Place to Be Nation.
Broadcasting from the state-of-the-art L-shaped studios at beautiful and serene Hoholoon Plaza in Vancouver, British Columbia, Greg Phillips and Nick Duke are the hard-traveling fanhounds.
Hard-traveling fanboys.
When you hear this show, you better run for cover.
Klondike Bill's a sausage lover.
I got a 10-inch kielbasa from Klondike Bill.
Hot traveling fanboys.
Slobber.
It's a weekly podcast and you better listen.
Keep your ears in mid-condition.
Ooh, hot traveling fanboys.
You got a 33-and-3rd chance of winning.
Hot traveling fanboys. Hot traveling fanboys. Our traveling fanboys.
Got two weekly segments coming to your town.
Reading, watching, and the rundown.
Do-do-do-do-do.
Spank it.
It's the greatest show on Place to Be Nation.
Certainly a unique situation.
Ooh, hot traveling fanboys.
Oh, they're pretty, they're skittles.
Hard traveling fanboys.
You vicious little son of a bitch.
They're indivisible. They're microwavable.
Oh, Mr. Eddie!
Ooh, hot traveling fanboy. Oy, 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 oy.
Are you gonna give me fucking anything on this show, or why are we even here?
Close enough to slap dick. Let me answer the fucking question.
Well, Klondike Bill told me that if he ever came across a woman who was extremely clean and well-kept, he would tell her to put on a pair of sweatpants and a sweatshirt, go take a 2-mile jog, and then come back and see him when she was done.
I believe it was quite sudden, and thank you.
Spend my days working hard on the go, but the hands on the clock keep spinning too slow, and I can't wait to be in the L-shaped studio tonight.
Well done. Well done. You know, as much as I enjoyed that, I have to point out that I learned during my weekend in New Orleans this past weekend that there are certain individuals in the Place to Be Nation that would not appreciate your country stylings, and I will just leave it at that.
Would there be a term that you would use to describe them?
Rat bastards.
Are you referring... Who are you referring to with this? Which certain individual?
Well, I don't want to take any, you know, we have to be careful of the politics of what we say on this podcast. We would hate to anger any people who are high up or possibly in charge of our entire endeavor here.
But I bet if I were to open up with something about hypnotizing someone.
Yes, or, you know, what's the old Frank Sinatra, old New York, New York?
I'd sooner die, my friend. Disgrace the land of Dixie in such a way.
What a unique Southern accent that was, but neither here nor there, I suppose.
Oh, good Lord.
You can probably already tell, not going to be on my vocal best tonight. My throat has been through quite an ordeal over the last several days. Down. I'm going to take a headlock. I'm going to do a go-behind. I'm going to take you down. Grab a heel, and then I'm going to apply an Indian death lock.
An Indian death lock. That when you think it's actually applied,
nope.
It's not actually applied all the way.
It's only about 20% of the way there to being applied. But once it's applied, it looks pretty damn awesome.
It's devastating.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. brief aside, one of the great ways to frustrate human opponents...
The offer was on the table.
The offer was on the table. It was. The offer was on the table.
You had but to say one word, Greg, one simple word, that word being yes.
Or yep.
No, whichever. We would have accepted either in this scenario.
Instead, I said ma.
You did say that, yes.
But nonetheless, Nicholas took a trip to Njalin for a podcasters convention.
Learned a lot of good podcasting techniques. Met up with other people who have online efforts of various types and sizes, and I come back as a better entertainer for having lived that experience, I feel.
Yes, and let me assure you, from what I've been told from my source, Nick's throat did indeed go through a workout.
I did almost die. I almost had a Jim Ross induced car crash on the way down there. So that was good to see both my life and Ricky Morton's farts flashing before my eyes.
Nick Duke, deceased, Jim Ross audiobook.
Yes.
We are here, and we are bringing you Off the Page. Now, what is Off the Page? I'll tell you real quick. Off the Page is our monthly look at a piece of comic book media that is not a comic book. These typically are movies or TV shows, but these could be anything ranging from games to, radio plays to all manner of elaborate things. And actually this month we're giving you our very first music review. That's right. We're stepping a little bit on our good friend David Sunday's toes, because we are bringing you our exclusive audiophile review of, let me make sure I get this title right, Nick, of The Music of DC Comics 75th Anniversary Collection.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this came out in 2010. Which presumably would be the 75th anniversary of DC Comics, Nick.
Yes, that is accurate. That is why it came out then. Good call on your part.
Yes. This is a collection of... It's kind of a Danny Hodgepodge collection, because it's not every... At least the version I listen to, which is on Spotify.
Mm-hmm.
You get on Spotify. This version is 31 songs deep, and it is not every DC Comics theme song.
Nor could it be. You know, with some of the movie length soundtracks, they wouldn't have had time to fit it all on one disc. But there is a second volume that was released a few years later. It was eligible to be included in this collection, and I gotta say, I wound up really enjoying listening to this today.
Yeah, this was this was a fun stroll down memory lane, and actually an exposure for some songs that I had never heard before. We're gonna get into all of that, and we're gonna do that. As soon as I clear my throat, which is right now. So, the music of DC Comics. This goes all the way back to, I believe, the earliest song on here is the first track, which is the Superman March from 1941. Now, do you have any idea what this was used for, Nick? Was this for the radio serials, or was this for the... movie serial.
I would assume it was from one of those. I'm not really sure. But I believe in 41, the movie serials would have been in full effect. So maybe it's that. It's hard to say, quite frankly.
But it also is kind of how it has developed over time, and it kind of sets the stage for. It's very domestic. It's that mm-hmm. kind of what you would think of. I think, Nick, is that like. Traditional superhero music sound from way back in the radio days, a very bombastic, very energetic, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you hear that a lot of the early music of DC is there's this kind of booming, 1940s announcer voice, Superman, hailing from Krypton or whatever, from the Batcave. You know,
yeah.
You got this booming announcer voice, and then in the back you've got these blaring horns and kind of, and like that was, it's like almost like inspiring little boys to jump up and pump their fists and fight or whatever, you know?
And I think what kind of surprised me was that I thought I heard some similarity in this opening track to the track that followed it, which is, of course, John Williams' iconic theme from Superman in 1978. Yes. It made me wonder if perhaps Williams didn't lift some things to pay homage to that earlier piece of music.
Timberg is the composer of that Superman march. Mm-hmm. I've got it here on my mobile Spotify.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I agree. I noticed that too. And almost to the point where it set the template for what mm-hmm. would come from a lot of these superhero themes
right.
later on. Like very bombastic, very I think I'm turning into Shaggy with all my references to bombastic.
Bombastic.
Nonetheless,
no, it wasn't
very inspiring to go into into battle. So you've got Superman is the character most represented here, by the way. We've got we've got music selections from the 40s. We've got music selections from Superman the Motion Picture, as you mentioned, Nick. The New Adventures of Superman from 1966, which was a cartoon. You got Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman from 93. The Adventures of Superboy, another cartoon from 66. The 1988 live-action Superboy, and Smallville season end title, which was an interesting inclusion. It's only 24 seconds long, Nick.
Yeah, that was pretty interesting. I think they were trying to get, you know, a representation of Superman from every era, you know, and so Smallville up to this point would have been the most recent Superman adaptation. This
right.
would have been even before Man of Steel. So made some sense why that one was included.
True, and it wouldn't have worked to fit in the theme song, which was an actual, you know, pop song. So that wouldn't have fit with the tone and tenor of this particular album. Batman is also represented well here, Nick.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a theme from something I've never even heard of called Batman the Electrical Brain from 1943. That's the name of the music. I'm assuming that was a serial.
I am thinking so as well, because it kind of had that narration to
the Bat Cave.
The yeah. Bat Cave. Batman and Robin stand ready to take on the forces of evil. Yes, it was a serial, apparently, which, by the way, is available on YouTube, so maybe we should check at some point.
We should check that out. And I love how it refers to Robin as his two-fisted sidekick.
Mm-hmm. As opposed to his one-fisted sidekick.
One-fisted sidekick, or his no-fisted sidekick.
Yes.
Which would be particularly useless in battle. I shouldn't say that.
At least it wasn't his one-footed sidekick, Zach Gowen.
Well, if it was his one-footed sidekick, Zach Gowen, he could be F5'd with his one leg into the pole. He hit the pole.
He would have had those most blessed of life. He would have been both Mr. America and Batman's little buddy in the course of one lifetime.
Wow. Mr. America, the greatest of all DC characters.
Mm.
Never did find out who that masked man was.
No, we didn't. I'm still my money's still on Mr. Fuji.
Batman is also well represented here, though. Mm-hmm. We have Batman the Electrical Brain from 43, the 1989 Batman theme by Danny Elfman. We've got The Adventures of Batman, another cartoon from 1967 by John Gart, who actually did a lot of 60s cartoon themes. I think all of them, actually, were done by John Gart.
The vast majority of them, yeah.
The Batman TV series theme from 66. Batman the Brave and the Bold theme song, 2008. Batman Beyond, main title, from 99. And something called Molossus from Batman Begins by James Newton Howard and Hans Zimmer.
That's just the main theme from Batman Begins, you know, the
yeah,
the one that plays during the rooftop car chase scene and stuff, you know, the dunk. You know what I'm talking about. I'm not going to even attempt it with my voice in the state that it's in. But
no, yeah. I believe you should.
No, that's not going to happen. Never gonna happen.
Not even for 1 million yen.
Yen? I don't know. You don't actually have 1 million yen, so that's not a real offer. And I certainly wouldn't want to, you know, embarrass myself in front of all of our listeners and any, you know, I have such a high reputation to maintain after all.
What you're saying is you don't give a damn about your bad reputation.
No, I do give a damn about my non-existent reputation.
Hmm. We also get, I'll just go ahead and read the track listing here. I've already gone through all the Superman and Batman ones, but let's just finish this baby off. We've got the Justice League of America by John Gart, 1967, another cartoon. Super Friends from 1973 by your favorite artist and mine, Nick, Hoyt Curtin.
What a great name is Hoyt. That's just fantastic.
It really is.
Wish my name were Hoyt.
That's one that is very special to the manager, Todd Weber. We also have the All Different, Nick. Super Friends Hour from 1977, also by Hoyt Curtin. Then there's, of course, the Justice League Unlimited theme, but not the Justice League theme. Curious, they didn't include both. But the Justice League Unlimited theme from 2004, a personal favorite by Michael McQuestion, which is a name too. We also got Legends of the Superheroes, 1979 by Fred Warner. The Teen Titans and Aquaman.
Yes.
By John Gart.
Yes, that was providing the inspiration for that early recurring joke here on the podcast airwaves. Aquaman.
Riding his noble seahorse. Swamp Thing, the 1991 animated series, I presume, Nick. Christopher Stone, is that correct, or is that from the Swamp Thing sequel movie?
I'm not sure.
That's got to be the cartoon if it's 91.
Yeah, and if I listened to it, the narration over the top of it, too, talking about, that kind of narration makes you believe it has to be the... got to be the animated series.
You wouldn't want to accuse the movies of being cheesy.
Considering the movie was released in 1982.
Right. Well, I know they made a sequel to it that was direct to video, so...
Yeah, Swamp Thing would have been in 91, but that is correct.
Then we've got, of course, everybody knows this one, Shazam, 1974, Yvette H. Blaise and Jeff Michael, which is one of the more names you could possibly have, I think.
Jeff Michael. What about Jeff Daniel?
Well, what about Jeff Daniels?
Well, what about various other individuals?
Daniel Daniels. Vincent, who lives here in Dothan, Alabama.
Michael?
Jack Michaels. The Flash, 1967. Green Lantern, 1967. Both by John Gart, the prominent John Gart. Green Lantern First Flight by Robert J. Crowell. The Atom, the Tiny Titan, John Gart. Hawkman by John Gart. Plastic Man Comedy Adventure Show from 1979 by Dean Elliott. That was the one that I particularly enjoyed, mainly for hearing describe the show. There will be action and comedy and adventure. He will fly. He will bend into different shapes. Wonder Woman, the animated movie end title by Christopher Drake. And finally, Wonder Woman by Norman Gimbel and Charles Fox. And oddly enough, Norman Smollett. So, looking through these tracks, Nick, first of all, what was the rest of the album as a whole?
I enjoyed it. You know, it's one of those things where coming in, I only had probably ever actually heard, you know, the most popular features off of this, those being the Superman John Williams theme, the Danny Elfman Batman theme, the Hans Zimmer Batman Begins theme, the Batman 66 theme, and the Wonder Woman theme, and the Justice League Unlimited theme, of course. But like a lot of these were relatively unknown to me, and I gotta say, as cheesy as they are, I loved pretty much all of the old, like, 60s yep. animated intros that John Gart did, and even into the 70s with, you know, the Justice League and the Super Friends and the Teen Titans ones that weren't done by John Gart or whatever. Those were all great, too. Just anything that was, like, from that era of animation where it wasn't afraid to wear its cheesy inspiration on the sleeve, I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, there's something to be said for embracing the cheese.
Absolutely, for sure.
Yeah. And both you and I know something about embracing cheese. I agree with you on that. Those 60s themes are so much fun, and I would even go so far as to go back to those 40s ones, the two that are on here, Superman March and the Batman one, whatever it's called, the electrical brain. They have that kind of, like, you know, we like to do the 1940s Superman announcer voice, but they have that kind of, like, when you hear them, there's no doubt about what era they took place in. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, they're just so dated to that era, but in a good way. Like a flashing you back to, like, a period piece Batman or Superman movie. So I think they're really cool, too. I think there's an interesting Dan hodgepodge of different eras and great music. I would argue, Nick, that the least memorable pieces of music from this are the more modern ones. The ones that stand out to me as particularly kind of bland and uninteresting would be where is it? 1988 Superboy, not very interesting, and almost not even appropriate for it. The show itself, I remember enjoying, but the theme, not much to it, really. What was the other one? There were a couple here that I should have jotted down notes for this.
The First Flight track from...
First Flight. Yeah. That was the other one that I was going to point out.
And the Wonder Woman animated movie title that was the ones that were just, you know, I don't know. Just, I mean, they were fine pieces of music, but nothing that stands out to you as being iconic and makes you wonder why bland, they were on there.
Bland is a good word for them. Right. The First Flight one is just weird to me because it's almost like you can't decide what it is. It's got a little bit of classical music to it, but there's like some weird synth stuff going on.
Yeah, I think it was trying really hard to sound alien and sci-fi, you know, sci-fi inspired at the same time, but came off as forced and just didn't do it for me.
Yeah, did not the more modern ones, and of course the Smallville End title is barely anything. It's not a bad piece of music, but it's 24 seconds. You know, there's just not much to it there. As far as the standouts, I think it's pretty obvious. My standouts would be the John Williams Superman score, or the Danny Elfman Batman score. I gotta be honest. I'm different from some in that I'm not somebody that just drives around and can listen to movie soundtrack scores. Rather, like, it's just not something I've ever really done. But man, those are some exceptions because I can totally see listening to those scores, because particularly I think the one that even though the Danny Elfman Batman has always kind of been my favorite since I was a kid, hearing it on good speakers, like through my headphones, that John Williams Superman score really is just dynamic. Absolutely dynamic.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree. Obviously, the ones that were iconic on here are probably in the standouts, but again, it was just so cool to me to be exposed to this different era of animation themes. So that was probably what I walk away from it the most impressed by. And you know, yeah, they were cheesy. Yeah, they were a little silly, but you know, it's a lot of fun there. I know, like the Atom one in particular, it's got the wacky shrinking sound effect in the background the entire time. That one's cool. Like the Aquaman one, as we've discussed many times, just all of that stuff was right up my campy wheel alley. Alley. Who gives a shit?
I also enjoyed going back to what we talked about at the beginning of this. I liked how to hear some of how the early themes evolved and influenced the later themes. Like Lois and Clark's a good example. It's a good distinctive theme song, but it clearly is drawing inspiration from the John Williams theme, which itself was drawing inspiration from those early, you know, the Superman march, from the very early days of Superman. So that's kind of cool to listen to. And I got to say, Nick, this is the first time I've ever heard the full version of the Batman TV series theme song from 66.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it awesome?
Amazing.
Yep.
Amazing. Like, absolutely. This is what people don't realize about this song, beyond what you hear on the TV show. It's a freaking rocker. This should have been a freaking number one hit, man. You've got that love, that mid-60s organ going in the background. You know, at one point, there's a little organ solo in the middle of the song. Badass. This song is just badass. Listen to this song. That is my take. If you take away nothing else, go to your computer or your workstation or your car or your iPod, your Walkman, your CD player, your cassette player, your 8-track player, your record player, your vintage Victrola 1951, full of your favorite records that you grew up on, and listen to this Batman TV series theme. It is incredible. It's so freaking good. Neil Hefti, so good. Man alive. It made me feel so badass, and it made me feel like, well, it didn't make me feel like a badass. It made me feel like I was in the 60s, which is kind of badass in and of itself. So, awesome song, Nick.
I've always been a big fan of that one, and I had heard the full length version several times before, and it's one that I've always had a great deal of affection for as well. So glad to hear that you're coming around on that one. Not that you were ever against it or anything, but I'd hear it impressed you.
I was never against it, but I am for it. And other than that, Nick and I are not musicologists. We're not we don't have the trained ear of someone like a Sunday Groove or an Easy Like David Sunday or a Glenn Butler podcast out spectacular or spectacular. We don't have the finely tuned ear canals of a young I don't know any music critics' names of a young Carson Daly. You know, we don't have that. But what we do have is what we've just given you, which is our very basic and simplistic look of, is it good or is it not good? And Nick, isn't it good?
It is indeed good.
Yes. So, recommendation from the Hard Traveling Fanboys, buy or rent it and listen to it.
Or just go to Spotify and listen to it for free.
Absolutely. That's what I did. I pulled up the web Spotify player on my laptop, plugged in some good old-fashioned headphones here, and listened away. And it was good.
It was.
And we're all better for it, Nick. Well, that being said, I got nothing else. What do you get for me?
Oh, precisely Dick. Nothing at all.
We do not have the theme song from the movie Dick, unfortunately.
Oh, wouldn't that be awesome if we did, though?
It's about Richard Nixon. Get your heads out of the gutter, people.
You sick freaks.
So what we're going to do now is we're going to take a break, and we're going to listen to some commercials for all of our fabulous podcasts here at Place to Be Nation and Place to Be Nation Pop. And those podcasts include our friends over at Geek and Sassy, our friends the Sellers Point podcast, the Sunday Groove aforementioned, Todd Weber's Conversation Comics, Talkin' Pop, the hottest sensation that they're talking about at the airports right now. I had some encounters at the airport, and they said, "Hey, have you listened to Talkin' Pop yet? What are your thoughts?" And I said, "My God, man, I've been talking about it on the show for weeks now. It's great. Check it out." So there's that. Plus there's Crap, if you want to listen to Crap as well. Can provide that anytime you'd like. And then there's also other stuff too. We've got, what else do we have on the feed, Nick? Kind of named. We've got Imaginary Stories Podcast. We've got
the NBA team with the esteemed Andrew Reich, who I had the pleasure of running into again in New Orleans this week.
Andrew Reich, a good man.
He is a good man.
Anyway, if I missed any, then I'm sorry. It wasn't intentional. Nonetheless, we've got all that at PlayStation Pop. There's all kinds of wrestling stuff. We're coming off the heels of WrestleMania week, so all your WrestleMania needs can be met on Place to Be Nation. And with that said, we're going to take a commercial break and come back on the flip side with an abbreviated read and watching and the rundown.
Consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we offer those to you on three great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way.
The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Potpourri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, an NWA Classics On Demand adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes, and while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlacementNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlacementNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlacementNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the post-WrestleMania edition of Hard Traveling Fanboys. We are still here in the L-shaped studio, enjoying this beautiful Vancouver weather, Nick. This kind of warm, cool, rainy, dry kind of weather here is great, wouldn't you say?
It was good. Yeah, it's been good. It's been weather, and I enjoy weather.
Mm. And whether you enjoy the show or not, we're going to keep going. Oh, I digress. Let us get right into our weekly look at the news and notes from around the world of comics. Nick, what do we call that little segment?
The wrap up?
No, close.
I don't know. If only we had with some form of musical expression that could tell people the name of it.
Let's pitch to it right now.
Welcome to the
That's right, it is the rundown, and we are going to start off with a member of the L-shaped studio, Nick, that's been neglected for a little while.
Indeed.
It's a little area of the studio we like to call the DCEU Corner.
DCEU Corner.
And the little story this week, because, I mean, this is huge news, Nick. Is the public ready for it?
Seeing as how it's been out there for a while before this podcast is even being recorded, I would assume they are ready for it and have probably already heard it. But let us act as if we are bringing it to them nonetheless.
Flash has been rumored for a while to get his own movie. Not rumored. They've said he's getting his movie. Mm-hmm. And for, you know, remember the announcement that was made last year, right, Nick, that this movie would be called Flashpoint, which carries with it Satan connotations, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it turns out that the Flash film, which has gone through three directors, multiple writers, is now shuffling titles. Because in an interview with Ready Player One screenwriter Dan Mazieu, with The Hollywood Reporter, Mazieu, who worked on a draft of the Flash movie, said, when it was titled Flashpoint, which implies that it's no longer titled Flashpoint. Hollywood Reporter's Boris Kitt then followed the piece up with a tweet saying, "I didn't say they were adapting Flashpoint. All I said, it wouldn't be titled Flashpoint. Maybe I've said too much." So here's what we know. The Flash movie will not be called Flashpoint, but may be based on Flashpoint, but may not be based on Flashpoint. And, most importantly, still doesn't have a director.
Yeah.
If only there were an expression that could be used in an image or GIF form to describe this situation.
Yeah, an image of certain trash-holding receptacles in a state of being expired by some sort of elemental force. I can't really... God, it's on the tip of my tongue, but I just can't come up with it, Greg.
I can't either. Maybe a frozen commode. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe.
But
who knows?
Nonetheless, this just feels like a...
Hey, I saw a gold commode this weekend, by the way.
Did you?
Yeah.
I've always wanted a solid gold toilet.
The place where we were staying, the Airbnb, had a golden toilet just sitting outside by the pool.
Oh, so you couldn't use it.
I mean, I guess I could have, but it would have been ill. It would have not
ill-advised.
It would not have been probably well regarded by our very gracious hosts at the Airbnb that the manager,
yes,
Todd Weber, and I stayed at.
It wouldn't have flushed, right? It didn't have any actual plumbing.
No, it was just there hanging out.
Well, that's still cool, though. I mean, who wouldn't want a gold toilet?
Who wouldn't?
That. Notwithstanding, this Flash movie feels like a, not good thing that's happening.
I have reached the point where I just say screw it and burn the whole thing down and start from scratch.
You're saying burn it down?
Burn it down. I mean, like, I've reached a point where I realize that my attachment to Al Gadot's Wonder Woman and limited attachment to Jason Momoa's Aquaman, notwithstanding, I'm just far more invested in seeing an actual workable version of the DC universe on screen that I am willing to give up pretty much whatever it costs to get there, at least in terms of other movies. So burn it down, start over, and give my damn DC universe and an actual good Justice League movie.
And perhaps a Flash that's better than Ezra?
Almost certainly a Flash that's better than Ezra. It wouldn't take much to be that. And yes, I know it's the name of a band.
From a disastrous cinematic universe onto a non-disastrous television universe, we move into the DC television world of the CW, and exciting announcement this week from the producers of Arrow that Colton Haynes, who portrays Roy Harper, will be returning as a series regular next season for season 7. Exciting news here, Nick. We just saw Roy back on the show for a couple episodes with Thea, and they went off in search of these mystical Lazarus pits that have been found throughout the globe. And I, for one, am extremely excited to see Roy back on the show. I think Colton Haynes adds an undeniable dynamic to the show. He's got great chemistry with all the leads. He has compelling action scenes, and is a character I am invested in to a much greater degree than Renee, Curtis, or Dinah.
I would agree with all of that, and now I just become interested in whatever the story mechanism they might use would be to bring him back. I'm interested to hear what their rationale is going to be and kind of what his role will be to play in season 7, I have some theories, but we'll just have to wait.
Please.
We'll just have to wait and let it all play out, won't we?
Oh, won't we? Yes. By the way, your sinuses sound much clearer this week than they did a week ago.
Thank you.
Yes, very exciting PN news that we're bringing to you on that front. And also exciting television news, PN news, is that how appropriate is this timing, Nick? How crazy is this timing?
Mm-hmm.
Just talked a week ago about why The Last Man, Brian K. Vaughan, and Pia Guerra, right? Piguera, I think that's right.
Something like that.
And how it ended up on both of our top 5 lists of the greatest non-DC Marvel comics. Well, we mentioned in there about how it's kind of been in development hell as far as being brought to a TV series at FX. No longer, apparently, because Why the Last Man has been ordered to pilot by the FX network. Everything that we talked about last week is still true, but now it's finally been ordered for a pilot. So at the very least, we'll get a pilot. This doesn't mean it'll become a series at all. We know that there have been many pilot shots, some good, many bad, that never made air. But we're pilot, Nick. And that means that if there's one shot, even if it never comes to air, there will be one torrented.
Exactly.
And so, so we will be able to see this at some point. Pretty exciting news.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of the timing of it works out, where you and I were just talking about how we thought this was still in development, but weren't sure because it had been so long. But then finally, here comes the pilot. So I'll be interested to see what it turns out to be. Interesting that FX is getting into the bed with DC here for this project. They've kind of been working primarily with Marvel and are set to become part of Marvel, essentially, or, you know, a sister company to Marvel. Anyway, so interesting move here from that standpoint. But hopefully, fingers crossed, the pilot turns out well, and we wound up getting then moved on to be a full series.
Well, while this will be the first episode of a potential Why the Last Man series, we're also about to get the first issue of a brand new Catwoman series by writer-artist Joelle Jones and colorist Laura Ulrich. And it will launch July 4th, the same day Batman number 50 is due out on shelves. And that, of course, is the big wedding issue between Bruce Wayne and Selina Kyle. And this series revolves around Selina learning that a new criminal Catwoman is operating in Gotham, and she sets out to stop her. And the first issue actually focuses on her wedding night. And she's back on the streets, and it refers to her as the Bat Bride. So fingers crossed that everything goes to plan.
I am not convinced by that at all. The very existence of this title concerns me and makes me worry that they're going to go back on the Batman Catwoman marriage. But perhaps that's just me being cynical. Yes.
Why is that?
I figure, you know, if you were going to have a solo series with her, there have been numerous opportunities over the years. And why all of a sudden do it now if the plan
is... They had one in the New 50, ran like 40-something issues.
They did. And what I'm saying is I don't understand the move to do it now unless she's no longer going to be a featured and recurring member in the Batman book.
I guess. I would say that Batman can't be a featured and recurring member of her book.
I'm not saying it can't happen, Greg. I'm not saying that. I am saying I am concerned... I've been concerned the entire time. It's not going to happen. They're not going to go through with it.
I'm still concerned too. Don't get me wrong. I've been the most concerned about this, as you know.
Right.
But
I guess what I'm saying is this does nothing to dispel that fear in my head.
Fair enough. It does nothing to increase it either. To me, like I think that there's no reason why. I think that meant the longstanding mentality in comics has been that, you know, you know, the A-list character is not going to be a side character in somebody else's comic. But there's no reason that can't be the case. You know, I think there's a way to pull it off for sure, because they live their lives, even
right.
They're together.
There's absolutely a way to pull it off. It's whether there is a commitment to that way from an editorial perspective, and that's what I doubt.
Now, if there's one thing that I've learned, is to trust Dan Didio. Not that he's even the architect of this. I have no idea what his involvement is. But it's never too late to take a pot shot, right, Nick?
Never.
We also have some Marvel news. Move on to the printed page. Printed page, Nick, imagine that. I wouldn't know what that looks like recently. But Amazing Spider-Man number 800. Big book. Big book coming up, right?
Yes. The end of the Dan Slott run, and of course the a anniversary issue. So,
yes, and a launching point for and Ryan Otley's fresh start relaunch with Amazing Spider-Man number 1. Mm-hmm. Big news that came out recently on April 5th, in fact, is that Amazing Spider-Man number 800 is bringing back the black suit, and it is sticking around for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. There was a story back in the early 2000s, Nick, that had the called Back in Black, in which Peter Parker brought back the black costume, free of the symbiote, of course.
Yeah, and that's the one thing about this that kind of concerns me, is I'm looking at Street Art, and it seems to be implying some sort of relationship between Peter and the symbiote again. That's certainly what appears to be happening on these pages. Maybe I'm reading them wrong. I very easily could be, but you know, we'll have to wait and see how it all plays out.
I'm looking at the same preview pages that you're looking at, and it does look a little symbiotic, but I read that it will not be symbiote related. So okay. I'm looking at the same thing you are, and it is a little odd. I believe that is the villain, though, that is looking all symbiotic and whatnot, but I don't know. Interesting. I don't know. I really don't know what to make of this, Nick. I kind of think it's a little bit of a gimmick, you know?
I would agree with that.
But the black suit's cool, so what can you say? At least they're not giving him a.
It'll enable them basically to move a bunch of books because it'll be a new number one, and move a bunch of books again later in that same run whenever Nick Spencer inevitably goes back to the red and blue costume. I mean, they'll use it as a marketing gimmick. It doesn't lessen my excitement for a new team on the book, just because like I'm so starved for a new creative team in charge of that character. There's not really much that they could do at this point, you know, to dissuade me from at least checking it out, because it's been too long since yours truly has been away from Spider-Man, and I'm looking forward to at least attempting to make my re-entry into that world.
I just told you there's a story reason for it. Like a legitimate story.
And there very easily could be. I haven't been reading the Dan Slott Spider-Man, so I don't know what's going to happen here in 800. I do know that, you know, one of the final story arcs has involved Norman Osborn apparently merging with the Carnage symbiote, so it could very well be something that is done for a storyline reason. Peter turns to the black suit for enhanced powers to fight this red goblin. I don't know. What I'm saying is I don't know what the storyline reason is going to be, because I'm not reading. So I'm going to have to trust that number one issue to, the number one issue to catch me up in that regard.
Clint Black.
The red goblin.
Well, we got to close with this story, Nick, on the rundown. I mean, this was the, to me, this is the biggest story of all of these.
This is the rare instance, perhaps the only instance in Hard Traveling Fanboy history, where it's a little sad that it's not an audio podcast, so we could show you a certain image right now to accompany this story.
Absolutely, absolutely. What else can you say before to preface this story? Kenny, motherfucker, fucking. Motherfucker. Nick, why don't you tell people what this story is?
No, so apparently, famed wrestling promoter and podcaster extraordinaire Jim Cornette. James E. Cornette has reached a deal with what publishing studio, Greg, was it? I forget.
IDW
to produce a 60-page original graphic novel that will feature stories from his time in wrestling. Not necessarily all tied together. I think it's supposed to be more of an anthology book. It's going to be titled Behind the Curtain, Real Pro Wrestling Stories. Going to be co-written by Brandon Easton and drawn by Dennis Medry, who also drew the recent Andre the Giant original graphic novel. And he seems to be excited about it. He mentions in an interview that he collected comics before he got into wrestling, and he wants to extend his special brand of storytelling into the A1C comics platform. So very much looking forward to that. Will be a must-read for both Greg and myself, I'm sure. And one can only hope we get the comic book adaptation of the infamous Dairy Queen drive-thru incident.
Dairy Queen
visit. Yes.
The Dairy Queen, which is on YouTube. You can find it.
Yes.
very interesting. He also added, quote, motherfucker. very interesting. So this is exciting, Nick. We got to find a way to end on this for a long book hunt, right?
Oh, absolutely. This will happen. No doubt about it, this will happen.
Well, that brings it into the rundown. Nothing else to say here, folks. We hope you enjoyed the news and notes of the comic book world. But now it's time to revisit something we've been away from for a few. We're not even going to have a full version of it still.
No.
Because we both of us have missed shows here and there. We've been caught up in a wrestling stupor, ladies and gentlemen. There's no other way to put it. But we're going to get to reading and watching.
Reading and watching. What you been reading and watching?
What you been reading and watching?
And, Nick, I know you are just hopelessly behind on The Walking Dead.
That's true. There is no Walking Dead. Nick, no Walking.
We're not going to talk about Walking Dead right now, and I haven't watched this week's episode yet. But we did have DC this week, some of them. However, I'm a week behind on Black Lightning. I haven't watched the most recent Black Lightning, so I will allow Nick to include it in his rankings and to say yay or nay. But all I have to review are Legends of Tomorrow and Arrow.
I'll just go ahead and quickly say yes on Black Lightning. Little unconventional. Was not expecting that type of story to be told, but I enjoyed it. Big thumbs up from me.
Big thumbs up from Nicholas. Now, on to Monday night. Yes, Legends of Tomorrow. And this is the penultimate episode of this season. This was a lot of things coming to a head to the point where I questioned briefly whether it was actually the season finale instead of the penultimate episode. Mm-hmm. But it was not. Can you tell that I like the word penultimate? It was the second to last episode of the season, which is what penultimate means. So you see Damian Dark actually putting aside his evil tendencies to work with our team of legends to try to defeat Malus, the evil demon entity that has possessed Damian Dark's daughter, Nora. So this leads to distrust and hijinks and all manner of problems. Meanwhile, Amaya makes the arguably selfish decision to go to her, but understandable also, to go to her home village in 1992 and try to prevent its destruction in the hands of warlords and presumably barbarians as well. And in the midst of this, Nate makes what I thought was an unfortunate choice at the time, end up working out, and helps her out along the way. It leads to issues with Malus, who they actually capture thanks to Damien's plan. And unfortunately, Damien, as he is wont to do, is tricked by Malus and ends up deceiving the team, as he often does. So, again, I thought this was a great episode. I don't think Legends has had a misstep that I can remember this entire season. It's been just outstanding and consistent from the beginning of the season to now. This was another great episode. Damian Dark is awesome. I always forget the actor's name, but he's great. He is he's super entertaining. His interactions, particularly with Ray. Ray was talking about the lines that he's saying things about, I was close, I had a special relationship with your daughter. And then Damian looks at me and goes, well, not like that. I just mean we bonded a little bit. And he goes, and you know, I really think that I need to be inside your daughter. And and Damian's reaction to that one was particularly good. So, great episode here, Nick, I thought. What did you think?
Yeah, I agree completely. Another fantastic episode from Legends. But like you, I was kind of wondering if this was going to be the season finale, even though I didn't think it was, just because of all the major things that were happening down the stretch. Unfortunately, we have to end our Legends season on something of a bitter note, as I'm to understand that the season finale features the return of Jonah Hex.
Jonah Hex. Yeah, not looking forward to that. Also, the one negative I would say about this episode, some laughably bad CGI on Amaya's daughter's fight with Grodd. Very poor with the kicks that weren't connecting at all. Mm. And, all that being said, it was still a great episode. And the CGI on Grodd was fine. But, so let's skip ahead to Thursday. And Thursday brought us Arrow. And this was what was promised last week, the blow-up between Oliver Queen and John Diggle, who have been besties since season one of the show, since the first episode, really, or at least the first couple episodes when they worked through some early issues. And they've had their spats along the way, but never anything like this. This is the first time, to my recollection, that they've ever actually come to blows with each other, except for a few times where Oliver, you know, it might have knocked him out in the early part of season one to keep him from remembering something. But this is the first time they've really gone at each other with an attempt to hurt one another. They really, a lot of tensions have boiled over. John's growing jealousy of being able to get the Green Arrow mantle, which he learns in the episode is more deeply rooted than that, in a growing distrust of Oliver's ability to lead. And it leads to some of the best acting, actually, of the season. I thought that the one-on-one scene between Oliver and Diggle, David Ramsey and Stephen Amell, was outstanding. It was incredibly well-delivered. The material was good, but they rose above the material to me and really made a memorable classic scene. And then, of course, it ends with a tragic, heartbreaking decision from Diggle when you think they might have gotten things worked out, and then it turns out that Diggle is leaving the team and going to work for Argus with his wife, Lila. Big surprise. I didn't see that coming. I figured they'd work it out. And now Oliver's a man on an island, and I am terribly afraid of the preview that I saw for the upcoming episode.
As am I. Has me being concerned.
Yes, and I will say, I'll have to see how it plays out, because I'm not totally cool with it either.
No, I mean, honestly, this whole, like...
I'm gonna agree about to say, I think.
This whole story would have made a lot more sense to be told last season. Like, in terms of the decisions that Oliver was making, you know? Like, I could have at least understood it last season from a certain perspective. But from this season, Diggle has backed him this entire season, and it feels like the whole... I don't trust your leadership thing kind of came out of nowhere, just because the writers wanted to make it a thing, just because they wanted to do the Diggle split, not that they had actually built to it in any logical way. Because it felt like him backing him and backing him and backing him, and all of a sudden decided that he was going to retroactively not back him anymore. So it was very odd from that perspective.
And this is a Diggle who, as Oliver points out in this really hard-hitting scene, had a drug addiction earlier in the season and made horrible decisions himself, and had apologized for those and said that he understood why Oliver behaved the way he did after that and everything. So, you know, I agree with you, Nick. I really thought that this Diggle angle kind of came a little bit out of nowhere, considering how Team OTA had pretty much stuck there. That's right, Team Original Team Arrow, as I just called them, have kind of stuck together through all of this and taken a hard line in the sand. And so it's weird that as an episode, I think it was great. But as a part of the whole, it's a problem to me. Because I agree with you, I don't like that rapid shift in Diggle, to the point where I thought that the angle was going to be that the drugs he had taken earlier in the season had done something to him, altered him in some way that was only starting to make itself clear. But nonetheless, I did think it was an excellent episode because of the performances. What did you think, Nick?
Yeah, I love the episode as well. I thought it was fantastic from an acting and action standpoint, particularly. Mm-hmm. Even though I have minor gripes with the storytelling, but big thumbs up for this one from me as well.
Yep. So I can only rank Q of the shows this week, and I would go Arrow with a slight edge over Legends in a good week of CW shows.
Yeah, I would go Arrow, Legends, Black Lightning, but. Yeah, Arrow, all three of them were phenomenal this week.
Yes. Other than that, no comic bookery on the board, Nick, that I can think of anyway, that I've watched or encountered.
Oh, I did read some.
Oh, reading. Yeah, what a novel concept. Let's get to that.
I'll go quickly. Trying to catch up on some titles. Read Doomsday Clock number 4. Absolutely outstanding. Jeff Johns and Gary Frank are killing it. This book features heavily the origin of the new Rorschach, and I absolutely loved it. Can't wait for you to catch up on that one. Batman 42 and 43, Wrapped up this little miniature Poison Ivy story that I still thought was kind of weird, but I can't hate on it too much considering Mikel Janin drew the ever-living hell out of it. Loved that. Mighty Thor 705 to it comes to the natural conclusion for the Jane Foster Thor run, a conclusion that I think we all knew was coming, but it is no less heartbreaking when it happens. Jason Aaron just is phenomenal at this. Jessica Jones, 17 and 18, end, for now at least, to the tenure of Brian Michael Bendis on arguably his most enduring original creation. 17 wraps up the Purple Man story in absolutely phenomenal fashion. And then 18 kind of gives you just Jessica on one last case, like a day in the life of Jessica. Not any like grand, you know, over the top goodbye, but just Bendis doing one more of those Jessica stories that Alias originally became known for, and I absolutely loved it, including the extremely heartfelt letter he left to the character and to all of her fans in the back of the book. Just loved that as well. Aquaman 34 continues to move forward this King Wrath storyline, although it has, when they have officially said goodbye to Stepjohn Sajic as ongoing artist, and the art has fallen off tremendously. The storytelling is still good from Dan Abnett, but I gotta say, not a fan of this new artist, Jones or some such. And then I also read Detective Comics 75, 976, and 977, which picks up the loose ends from the fall of the Batman storyline and the decision that that Batwoman made in that, and lead right into this new event, or this new storyline called Batman Eternal, which is supposed to be James Tynion IV's swan song on the title. Something of a civil war amongst the Gotham Knights, as they had come to be known, and I am enjoying it thus far. And then finally, the last book I read this week was Green Arrow 38. It was Ben Percy's, well, after more than 40 issues of writing Green Arrow, saying goodbye to the entire Arrow team, and I absolutely love this as well. Juan Ferreira on art. Get the Ollie and Diana right off into the sunset together, signifying that that's definitely going to be a dynamic that will continue to be explored as the Benson sisters prepare to take over as the full-time ongoing writers here in the next few months. So that's what was on my reading docket.
And I actually have to backtrack for a moment because I've been watching something else. I added the new sci-fi series Krypton.
Mm-hmm.
To my DVR list because I watched the pilot episode and then watched the second episode and am sufficiently hooked on it. Now, I haven't watched episode 3 yet, and I think they're on episode 4 now. Haven't watched that yet either, but I gave it a shot on the pilot episode, and I gotta say, Nick, I kind of ridiculed this show when it was announced, as you may remember.
Yeah, well, I think we all did. It seemed so silly.
It seemed silly. It seemed uninteresting. I've never, ever been interested in Krypton as a concept, even in the comics. It's just never appealed to me. I like Superman. I like Clark. I'm not really that interested in Kal-El. But I don't know if it's the incredible production values of this show, which I think helps a lot, the set design and things like that, the writing, the story they go with here. But it's very compelling, and it's about Clark's grandfather, biological grandfather, obviously, Seg-El, on Krypton in the years before even Jor-El is born. He's a young man, and you pick it up with his grandfather being executed by the Kryptonian Tribal Council, and it sets in motion the basic story of the show, which is this political story. It's almost like this political drama in terms of how the hierarchy works on Krypton, this really creepy ruler called the Face of Ra'al, and his kind of main right-hand man that does most of his dirty work for him, who also ordered the execution of Seg's grandfather. And then you've got Seg plotting to get his revenge on him. Meanwhile, Adam Strange arrives from the future with Superman that is slowly suffering from entropy and being erased because Brainiac has gone back in time as well and is seeking to eliminate Krypton from history to basically do away with Superman once and for all. And the way that it's told on the show is really compelling. The acting is really good. The characters are really good so far, and the set design is awesome. Like it looks top notch. So I would say if anybody out there, even if you were kind of poo-pooing this concept because it's a prequel, you know, and I'm not a fan of prequels, but the story they go with and adding that kind of time travel dynamic to it makes it compelling to me in a way that it might not have been otherwise, because, oh, you know how it all turns out. Well, maybe you don't know. So they've really done a good job of subverting my expectations. Credit to David Goyer for the concept and the writing. It's been really strong.
Yeah, I would agree completely. I haven't watched as much of it as you have, but I did catch like 20 or 25 minutes of the pilot episode, and I was actually a lot more taken in by it than I expected to be. And it's one of those things I hope to at some point get to. It's going to be on my ever-growing list of things I'd like to watch someday.
Very good. Well, that brings an end, as I understand it, to reading and watching. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's time for another segment that we do now, but it's a special week. I mean, you've had, of course, an incredible weekend experience, Nick. So I'm going to make an editorial decision to change the wrestling minute. Wrestling 3 minutes.
Oh God! Wow.
That means there's 3 minutes.
Abba dabba da da.
That's right. And so the 3 minutes to talk about wrestling, we can talk about your weekend, we can talk about the superstar shakeup, we can talk about Pierre Carl Ouellette, whatever you want to talk about.
Oh, I don't know. I don't even know where to start.
Well, let's hang on. I've got the stopwatch right here, and 3 minutes, we're on the clock starting now.
Well, you know, to start with, I will say that let's keep it focused on the wrestling. I've been told that there will allegedly be a special edition of a certain Place to Be podcast addressing all the social events that went down during WrestleMania weekend. So we'll see if that ever actually comes to fruition or not. So I'll withhold from
all the social situations.
Yes, all the social situations that resulted in Place to Be Nation. Meet up this weekend, to the best of my knowledge, anyway. So wrestling. Didn't I get to see as much wrestling as I thought it was? I had originally intended on hitting some WWN shows and got prevented from doing that due to some extenuating circumstances. But I will say that of the two wrestling shows I saw this weekend, we started with NXT TakeOver New Orleans on Saturday night at the Smoothie Center. And to say I loved it would be an understatement. I think the debate I've created in my head since the event ended was not just how much did I like it, but might it be the best live wrestling experience I've ever had? Previously, the best wrestling show live and in person was mine and Greg's first Ring of Honor show, Supercard of Honor 3, the night before WrestleMania 24 back in 2008. To me, this TakeOver card was just as good, if not better than that.
I mean, I only watched this show from my couch, obviously, versus being there live, like I was for Supercard. But it was amazing. I think this was the best TakeOver show, the best NXT show, one of the best quote pay-per-view events that WWE has probably ever produced, and that's saying a lot.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree completely. You know, the 5 matches on the card. Each match completely different from a structural point than everything that came before it. And each match, I mean, I think the low match for me is probably the triple threat tag title match. And that was still really good and had a cool finish that nobody saw coming and gave you a memorable moment. So, love that TakeOver show. And then moving on to WrestleMania, I thought the first half of WrestleMania had it on pace to be one of the greatest WrestleMania of all time, had it been able to maintain that pace. And while I would argue that nothing really that happened in the back half of the show was necessarily bad, it definitely lost some momentum, and the crowd, you know, kind of got a little disrupted, and then got into outright revolt by the end, of course.
Right. Yeah, agreed. I enjoyed WrestleMania. Thought it was overall a really good show, but there's no denying the back half really slowed down, particularly the last hour of the show really slowed down, and And that's disappointing. By the way, I'm making an editorial decision to extend this as long as we want it to go. Mm-hmm. So the 3 minutes is up, but we're going to keep going for a moment. So, yeah, that was I agree, Nick. That was a really – I think you got maybe the best first half of WrestleMania ever. And then you got, you know, kind of a middling back half. So mm-hmm. all in all, might still end up a top 10 Mania. What do you think?
I'd have to go back and look at it, you know, really sit down and think about it and rewatch the show with a television perspective with
right. The live experience does always add something, yeah.
Fresh eyes. You know, there were numerous circumstances and distractions that had me scatterbrained somewhat throughout the show. So yeah, I think a rewatch will be in order before I can really determine the historical placement of this card.
Yes. Then, of course, we had Monday Night Raw last night, Raw after Mania, which to me had a much better crowd than it has in recent years, and that they did not disrupt any segments. They did not really ruin anything.
Yeah, and to WWE's credit, they intentionally, it felt like, went out of their way to not give them anything to crap on. It was all like stuff that kind of crowd would be into. You know, new debuts and guys they like in the main event, and you know, the one time they threw a guy out there that they knew everybody hated, Reigns, they had one of that crowd's favorite guys, Samoa Joe, come out and eviscerate him verbally. So good moves for WWE, and looking forward very much to seeing what they have on tap for SmackDown as soon as we get off these airwaves.
Yes, very much so. See if we can top Raw somehow. Overall experience, Nick, in terms of just the wrestling side of it, one of your better WrestleMania trips?
Oh man, that's so hard to say, because I mean honestly, we've been so lucky. You know, these have been, I'm trying to think, I've done 24, 27, 28, 30, 32, 33, 34, so this is my seventh WrestleMania, and of those, five now have been really good, as those being 24, 28, 30, 33, and 34. So easily better than 27 or 32. It would have to be a thing that I'd have to, again, sit down and think about. Because really, honestly, like, 30 and 28 are both cards that I have a massive amount of respect for. On first glance, I think it's a better show than 33. And I would have to make that debate for me personally as to whether it's better than 24. You know, I'm also very high on 24, being that it's our first Mania and stuff. So, the upper half of my live Manias. How about that?
Yeah, and you didn't do the WWN shows this weekend. So that does, affect that to a degree. Okay, let's do a lightning round real quick to wrap up the wrestling talk for the time being and move on about our lives. Best match of the weekend.
Oh, God. North American ladder match. North American title ladder match, NXT TakeOver.
I'm going with Gargano, Ciampa, NXT TakeOver. Worst match of the weekend.
Oh, man. You know, there weren't really any bad ones. I guess Brock and Reigns. Either Brock and Reigns or the Bar against Strowman and Nicholas. Whichever of those, take your pick.
Congrats on the title win, by the way.
Thank you.
I would go with probably Brock and Roman on that one.
Yeah.
from what I watched anyway, I only watched Ian and WrestleMania.
Right.
Let's see. Breakout or I'm not gonna breakout. Standout performer of the weekend.
Ricochet.
Yeah, I might be inclined to agree on that. Yeah,
Ricochet.
Let's say that would be good for breakout performer. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Overall wrestler of the weekend.
Here's one for my people that I enjoyed the weekend with. How about Adam Cole, baby?
Very good. I am going to go with John Gargano. moment of the weekend.
Strictly from a wrestling perspective, let's go The Undertaker just destroying John Cena.
Oh, that was pretty good. that was pretty good. I am going to go with it's really a match more than anything else, but I'm going to go with Ronda Rousey overperforming in her debut. That was a really cool thing to see.
Yeah, it was. It was good.
Fan. So, anyway, with all that being said, folks, we'll wrap up our wrestling talk here. We'll save it for a Comics on Rest podcast, which is to come. And allegedly. And by the way, I am moving. By this time next week when we do the show, barring some unforeseen circumstance, I will be in my new home, hopefully with internet set up, and we'll have more time for podcasting. More guest appearances, more podcasts, who knows. But I'll have more time in my day, Nick. And God, if there's one thing people have been clamoring for at the airport, it's more of the hard traveling fanboys.
Oh man. Well, you know, anytime people want us, who are we to say no?
Who are we to say no? And in my case, I just eat some more and get larger. So there's literally more of me to go around. With all that being said, folks, we hope you enjoy this broadcast, this telecast, if you're watching us on TV somehow, which if you are, let us know. That's interesting. What do we have coming the folks' way next week, Nick?
Right now on the docket is a very special long book hunt of your favorite stories of all time, Man of Steel by John Byrne. Now, there is also the possibility that that could become Place to Be Nation Comic Book Theater, but that is entirely up to the discretion of the illustrious manager, Todd Webb.
All right. Between the two of us, if it's not Comic Book Theater, we may have to come up with something else, because I'm not sure I'll have time to reread it by this time next week on account of the move, but we'll see.
We'll handle that. We'll keep that. Let's keep the business out of the ring, brother.
Oh, and I will say, before we go off the airwaves here, Nick, your Atlanta Braves are playing fairly well in the month of April, which of course means
absolutely nothing. Right. That's true.
All right, folks, we hope that you've enjoyed this broadcast. We will be coming to you through your ear holes next week as well, and maybe even coming like fire through your ear holes. If you have any suggestions, comments, complaints, concerns, whatever you may have, you may reach us on Twitter at gphillips8652, at nickduke87. You can go to Facebook, to the Place to Be Nation Comics Facebook page, and join the group, join in on the discussion. You can email us, gregp@placetobenation.com, nickd@placetobenation.com. And that's it. If you want to send a carrier pigeon, you can do that, but just DM us to get those deets. So see you next time, folks.
Hard traveling fanboys.